there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
I respect you, and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, Jaya.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. We should have a full show tonight because I've not had internet shutdowns during the day. So sorry about this. I hate being unreliable on the internet, but it's totally out of my control. These ISPs in rural areas, there's nothing you can do about it. Lapidus says, glad you're enjoying the pickled herring, JF, per my recommendation. Yeah, I remember that it came from, I didn't remember it was from you especially, but I did remember that someone had told me in the chat, and that is one of the discoveries of my adult life. One thing that I really didn't know about. I had seen these bottles, these little pots, refrigerated, pickled herring. And now it's in my intro. Now I do pickled herring in my intro. So that's all thanks to you. Pookie says, can't fucking believe JF is skinnier than me right now, by the way. Oh yeah, I'm losing weight. That's large. That's not even X-large shirt, and I'm starting to be loose in it. I think I might get to medium. Medium-sized shirt, hopefully. I don't think I should go any smaller than this. That wouldn't be recommendable. I am so tired tonight. I haven't slept yet since yesterday night because I spoke with Grok all night, and next thing you know, I look at the time and it's 9 a.m. That is how intense I grok. I must be costing a lot to Elon Musk. That is what I'm curious about. Like, am I draining $1 million of electricity from Elon Musk? Or am I like draining $1,000? But there, I'm pretty sure he's paying for more electricity than I'm paying for my subscription to Twitter Premium. Because I've been pushing Grok to the limits in terms of math. We've been talking so deep about the Goldbeck conjecture, the zeta function, so much learning. It is truly, people don't realize yet how much this will revolutionize, because most people, they can't test that degree of depth. Most people wouldn't know the difference between a general AI that spouts some Wikipedia mishmash and an actually thinking AI that can reflect with you, that can engage with you, where you can say, oh, what about this? And then you can say, oh yeah, you're right. This is a world of difference, and people have not yet measured in their life just how much it will change their life. Max Mercer says 25 cents. I'd be super surprised that Grok can deliver me that much math knowledge and math thinking so deep. I have no words for it. Grok has been laying out Python scripts on demand for me. Yeah, let's check if this, and Grok just spits a program that does it perfectly. You're not going to convince me that this costs 25 cents of electricity. John Drake says infinite energy will be needed for AI. Yes, absolutely. It will put a demand on energy. Everything that is, that's so weird about Elon. Everything that he does demands more electricity. Is there a conspiracy behind this? What is happening here? Is Elon a front for the electricity, the big electricity companies? Lapidus says, from where do some of the chat messages that don't appear in YouTube come from that JF reads about? Well, it's the only live chat that we have. Sometimes I may read a tweet. Sometimes I may read the super chats that are sent through Streamlabs. And sometimes there are super chats that are sent through YouTube. So if I read a message that appears on the screen, that's a Streamlabs. And Streamlabs is my favorite platform for support for the show. The X algorithm, the X recommendation algorithm has been published. So we can now have a look at the transparent algorithm. So that's just the kind of readme text explanation of it. Someone demands a for you feed request. The query is processed in terms of metadata, filtered. Then the scoring part happens. The Phoenix scorer, ML prediction. So one of the factors that influence whether a tweet will get shown, Grok-based transformer predicts the probability of a like, the probability of a reply, the probability of a repost, and the probability of a click. So when you see your For You feed, it is processed by Grok, who makes a decision. And it's a probability. It's an estimation based on prior knowledge. But it's not a true measure. It is what Grok thinks will happen. And what Grok thinks will happen is that you have 5% chance of engaging with it, clicking with it, reposting it, replying to it, like. So what you really see on the For You feed, basically, is an amalgam of different tweets that have scored high on these estimations from Grok. Eventually, weighted scorer. The weighted score is the sum of some weight times the probability of some action. So basically, not all of these actions are treated equal. I haven't looked into the code deep, but that means, let's say, maybe they value like a lot. Maybe they value replies less. Maybe they value clicks more. So each item of action that Grok thinks you're going to do with that tweet has more or less value. And I don't know what are the weights. I would guess that a like is high value. I would guess that a reply sometimes may be of even higher value. But if it's a blocked reply and you end up in the spam section, perhaps it's actually punishing to reply in negative ways. And then after the score has been weighted, author diversity score. Attenuate repeated author scores to ensure feed diversity. Ah, so there is kind of a let's attack the king mentality in the algorithm. If you've been winning too much on Twitter, if you've been memeing on two or three big tweets during the day or during the week, you are less valued by the algorithm. I think that's fair. I think that's fair. Or else you have a winner-takes-all scenario. If anything, I would think that the author diversity must be increased. In fact, it shouldn't just be downweighted. There should be active advantages for exploratory discovery of new Twitter people that may be like you. So I would go very aggressive on this third prong. Selection. Sort by final score. Select top K candidates. Filtering. Visibility filtering. So filtering for spam, deleted, violence. So removing anything that is objectionable. And then, poof, it ends up ranked. And you end up seeing whatever the algorithm has determined are the top scores. So that's how it works. Lots of filters along the way. First and foremost, the Grok, the fact that the decision relies on Grok. I'm going to ban you, Toby, if you continue making this kind of comment. I don't want any trouble, and I'm giving you a chance by just deleting your message, but like, don't be a fucking idiot. Don't be a fucking retard, please. It's like, how many years do I have to explain this? How many years do I have to live with stupid fucks? I love this story that has been happening. Well, John Brown says, you've never answered my question, JF. Well, what's your question? I'm seeing your claim that I haven't answered your questions. I don't see any question. If so, that's lame. I thought you were better than that. Well, this is censorship. Just tell me your fucking question. Adrian Bennon says, JF, I have not seen your face for years. You look amazing, bro. Oh yeah, well, I'm not done. I'm going to shape my facial structure. I'm still fat. I still have a good 30, 40 pounds to lose. Once I get there, I will be building my stature, clavicular. I'm coming for you. I have said it, and I'll say it again. I believe that in 10 years from now, I will be mugging clavicular. I actually believe this. I actually believe that I have good conservation, that my lifestyle as an artist of the internet protects me from the sun, from the dangers of bar life. I'm convinced that I live a less risky lifestyle, which means that clavicular may be dead in 10 years from now. With all the drugs, with all the going out at bars, I mean, in Florida, there can be guns anywhere. You can be killed. If clavicular ends up in a coffin, there is a point that there is the JF singularity of beauty where I will be starting to mug clavicular. Decomposition is unforgiving for the facial structure. John Brown says, what's the point of preserving mediocrity? Okay, well, mediocrity what? Like, I want to answer your question, but what is the point of preserving mediocrity? Well, is it something that I advocate for? Are you accusing me of being mediocre? Your question is unanswerable. And you complain that I'm not answering it. Ked's Dead says, you are currently just a Chad Light. I have a ways to go. John Drake says, what? 30 or 40? That sounds like a lot. What is your current weight, JF? I don't reveal my current weight, but I would like to aim for 180. 180. I don't mind. I don't want to be thin. I just want to be healthy and meet the dating market where it exists. John Brown says, like, your physique is all right, but imagine if you had a black physique like a Francis. You know what? I'm going to ban you. I'm going to fucking ban you because you are just consuming time. A parasite of the internet. You're just using my eyes, using my time to say stupid fucking stuff. And you start with accusations that aren't even true, and then your question is fucking retarded. I'm done. I haven't slept for about 42 hours now. I'm fucking done. Now, this Nico story with clavicular, I love it. Because this is a microcosm of every guy group that goes to a bar. Because there is always, in a guy group that goes to a bar, there is always one to whom we say the traditional sentence, bro, you're scaring the hoes. And I believe that somehow through this public event that is happening where, okay, so there was this controversial song by Ye being played, while clavicular, Sneeko, the Fresh and Fit, Myron, Andrew Tate, and Andrew Tate's brother were at a bar. Apparently, there was one play of that music in the car as they were getting ready to enter the bar. And then there was one play of it in the bar, according to the telling by Nick Fuentes yesterday. And now the Tate brothers are coming out against Sneeko and Tristan Tate in particular. Tristan Tate issues a statement on who played Ye's song, claiming it was Sneeko. Everybody on the bus saw Sneeko take the phone from Justin Waller's hand, turn off the country music, and put on Ye's song. I normally wouldn't tell on him, but it was live streamed to 50,000 people in HD. Putting people with far more to lose in compromising situations for clicks isn't a cool thing to do. If he were under 1% of the gunfire Andrew and I were, I wouldn't have done that to him. So there are mixed reactions on the internet. Some people believe, oh, you shouldn't be cucking to all this. And yes, it is a form of cucking to play the game of the left on this, you know, to play the game of cancel culture and guilt by association. Because I dream of a world in which you can be in a place and there's music playing and where people don't make the association. Oh, therefore it's you, it's your music, you're promoting that music. No, it's like they were at a place, someone played that music, apparently Sneeko, and it's not the responsibility of Andrew Tate. But I dream of a world in which we could be neutral about this rather than one side or the other. Apologizing, I dislike it. But sanctifying the sin of it is also wrong. So it's wrong both ways here. Now, there has been explanations also on the internet. You know, the Tate brothers were targeted unjustly by political persecution. And they travel a lot. I don't know what's their status in the US, but you could easily think that in their travels, whether they want to go back to the UK at some point, whether they get in trouble in Romania at the request of Western governments, or whether they want to enter the US, you can very easily imagine a future in which it's not Trump administration and they're not let in because the authorities decide you are a danger to society. So I can understand, and I do believe that provocation, edginess, is absolutely fine. We should respect it and adore it when it happens. But it's also every people's choice, every person's choice, when they engage in the edginess. And in this case, the Tate brothers are feeling that they were basically pushed into edginess against their consent. There was speech rape happening. Sneeko committed a speech rape by causing trouble in a situation where he doesn't care about being edgy, but he may be causing trouble to them by doing so. And I think that this little segment absolutely revealed the state of mind of Sneeko as this was all happening. Look at this video. So you see how the big eyes, bro, you're scaring the hoes. This is the guy that played the controversial song in the car. If we follow the chain of thought, it's probably him that requested that it played inside the bar, I guess, or that pushed the DJ or that paid the DJ. I mean, if he did it in the car, he would redo it. And look at the intensity in his eyes. Is there a Sneeko cocaine problem of some sort? Because he's yelling aggressively at the camera in a way that's overconfident. I know that Sneeko has spoken against sin from his Muslim perspective many times. But I also know that he's had periods where he was falling into sin and then kind of recovering and saying that he regretted it. Is that possible that we're looking at cocaine brain here or some other drug? Or maybe he was drunk. I don't know. Or maybe he was just like many of these guys in parties, the bros that scare the hoes. They are always heightened. Their threshold of aggressiveness is always heightened. And I believe that probably Andrew Tate, Nick Fuentes were engaging in this whole soiree as a professional endeavor. And so they didn't want trouble. But Sneeko probably approached it from an individual perspective. We will have fun. The thing is, when you're a personality, when you're a public personality and you do streaming, there's really no moment in life that is yours. And you're not supposed to be like Sneeko. You're always supposed to be thinking about the camera and thinking that you were just... So the operation is... Because as Nick Fuentes tells it, it wasn't planned in advance. It was just a kind of Nick Fuentes being the butt of a joke, where at the end of the night they said, hey, what wouldn't it be fun if we brought the geeky intellectual Nick Fuentes into a Florida nightclub? So that was the idea. And it's very possible that Andrew Tate didn't approach this as, oh yeah, that would be fun for me. He probably approached it like a professional streamer and personality approaches it, which is, this is an occasion for memeing. This is a professional endeavor. I'm going to spend a certain amount of money on models and crap and entry into Vendome and security and whatever, and it's going to generate attention. That is a rational way to approach it. What I see in the behavior of Sneeko is not a man who's there for business. Look at him singing the song with hatred in his face. And I don't know that he's singing that controversial song here. I think that's just another moment of the night, but you can see he was probably aggressive like this all night. So I believe we have the breaking here of a friendship between him and the Tate brothers, because we have on the one side Tristan Tate denouncing his behavior, and then we have Andrew Tate going onto shows like the PBD podcast, and he made basically an apology to his lawyer, saying we are not endorsing the content of that song. It wasn't Andrew Tate that wanted to play that song. So clearly he was trying to get out of trouble. But it's also a way to amplify attention. It's a way to take that little story of a bar and extend it over a couple of days of internet attention, I guess. He went on PBD podcast, and Nick Fuentes is characterizing his appearance there as disappointing from the perspective of the host, Patrick Bet-David, who allowed his emotional co-host to hijack the Tate interview and turn it into a 50-minute struggle session. Yeah, everyone is guilty to an extent of this. Participating to cancel culture, participating to, oh, well, it's wrong, we need to figure it out, we need to talk about it. And it's like they talk, and it's all really... guilt by association. What if there was a minority victimized by this song in the bar? How would he feel? This is what you do when you have zero content, honestly, because it's really not interesting questions. I wish that we were in a world in which there is no apology requested, no apology expected, no apology needed. That's all. That's the ideal state of the world. Plapides says that Sneeko may have been just having this kind of Muslim type behavior, this kind of aggressive ferventness. Perhaps it wasn't drugs. Perhaps it was just an exaltation, a religious exaltation of sort. But he was too intense. He was too intense, and he scared the hoes. And when you have Andrew Tate having to apologize on podcast, you know that the hoes have been scared. You know that something has been done wrong. Someone was asking, when will my book come out? I'm aiming for beginning of fall. I've taken a break for 2 or 3 days. I've not been writing white people food. Sometimes you just need a break, but I'm at 220 pages and I'm aiming for 350 pages. I think I will get there in time. It's looking really great. Evacuations today at the World Economic Forum after strange odor caused couching. Okay, so maybe an attack or maybe just an accident with a gas pipe or whatever. Ames says, are you still writing The Moral Signal? Well, I'm getting White People Food out first, for sure. I am still in the plan of writing The Moral Signal, but I just didn't feel it this year. And this year I felt I need to get a book out that is simpler to write than The Moral Signal. And I thought, what is realizable within a year? And I went, cookbook. Cookbook is something I can produce. Stentron says, this will be the first physical book I buy in years. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a special thing that has happened to the book industry across the years. Because the mall, ultimately, the mall hasn't survived the 2000s. So when the mall doesn't survive, and everything gets digitized, and people don't go to the mall, so they don't see the book, it becomes a very different economy. And I've seen this very early in my career, which is why I've decided there is a path for selling books in the new world. But it's not what people think. It's not begging for 7 years to various mainstream editors just so you can get your little spot or your little illusion of a spot in a library. That's done because the margins are fucking low. The margins of the book industry are just theft for authors. You know, there used to be, and this doesn't even exist with Amazon anymore, but there used to be in the classical book industry the rebate of the author. That was just how desperate is the author is to be in brick and mortar libraries. And the author rebate, I swear, it's like if you are selling your book in a brick and mortar store, let's say you had royalty on a book that was set at, from your editor at $4. The author, to have the privilege of being sold in big libraries in malls, had to accept that $4 would be reduced. And it would be reduced anywhere between 15 and 55%. That was the range. So at 55%, few libraries would take you because they want the money. This $4 that the author could make in principle, they don't want to pay it. They want all that money for themselves. So authors were diminishing and diminishing. They were giving away their book for $3, $2, $1 per book. Now that is what happened. And a lot of desperate authors, because they were all pursuing the, I need to sell a million. I want to be one of the best author. And of course, no one becomes this, except a handful of things like J.K. Rowling and that kind of stuff. But so you had authors really desperate and they were giving away their books. And Amazon totally changes this. Amazon makes it so that a success author is not a million copy. Now, of course, congratulations if you make a million copy. But the game on Amazon is completely different. It's you're going to sell between 50 and 10,000 or 20,000 books or 30,000 books. And the question is, how much will you cultivate interest into you sufficiently to direct people to buy your book? And on that book, you will not have to put a rebate of making $1, $2, or $3 per book. In fact, you're going to make more than the $4 base that you would be supposed to have on the regular industry. Break here sends a super chat. He says, any idea when a new math-based video will come out? I'm discussing a lot about math with Grok. I could definitely make one. I could make one that's more educational around the zeta function, the Riemann hypothesis. If that is what you demand, I mean, you sent a super chat. I'll take a low news day and I'll do that. I'll take a low news day in the next 2 weeks and I'll just geek out on math with you guys, because those are shows that are not super popular. There's like 90% of my audience doesn't want to hear me talk about math. But maybe I'll pick a Saturday or something like this and I'll give you a show, since you've been sending a couple of super chats asking about this. I'm happy to do it. The question is, what will I reveal? Because I'm currently engaged with Grok on very advanced discussion, but not ready for publication, not ready for I can share it. But once I'll be ready to share it, you're going to have more than a video. You're going to have a PDF and an article. YouTube commenter says, I'm going to give white people food for my sister for Christmas. She is newly red-pilled on the race question. Oh, yeah, that will be amazing for her then. Sadie Edward says, I miss that content too. I remember JF doing Euclid. It was amazing. Oh, yeah, I mean, we could go back to great classics also. I mean, Euclid is always good. Euclid never ages. What a crazy guy. With parchment and compass and straight edge, the guy derives everything. Tan, sin, cos. It's like, for you, sin, cos, tan is like a symbol on a calculator. Euclid, for him, sin, cos, tan was just taking a bar, taking a compass and... It's like the ninja of geometry. He didn't even name it sin, cos, tan. We named these things sin, cos, tan like 2,000 years later. Unbelievable. And then you look back and you realize, holy shit, that's sin. Euclid was computing the sin using triangles onto circles. Holy shit. I mean, Euclid is just a demonstration that there is a truth out there and that people converge toward trying to search for it, and they reach it through different branches. It's amazing how in Euclidean geometry, the things that are true, that the truths that have been attained are physical and lengthwise. And yet, in modern form, we think of them as numbers and we think of them as functions. But Euclid was seeing all of it as lines and circles. I mean, Euclid was able to multiply. Like, if I ask any of you on the regular chat, multiply this length by this length. You have a compass and a straight edge that has no measure on it. Just a straight line and a compass. Multiply this by this. How are you going to do this? Well, you take a compass. You take a compass and you chain them, basically. You chain them. You chain one of them. You chain the second one. You chain the third one. And you can multiply. You can even prove with a straight edge and a compass that there are infinitely many primes. because the lengths of the lines that you can multiply are actually just like the primes, and they form integers just like the primes. Holy shit. Lord Lutu II says, JF, have you seen videos, there are hundreds, of mathematician Norman Wilderberg? He is now retired, prof of mathematics at University of New South Wales, Australia. He is a finitist. No, I have never heard of him. Norman Wilderberg. What is this? A finitist. Wilderberg and ultra-finitism. A smug dismissal of the real number system and infinite sets. Ah, yeah. Okay, so it's the radical idea that infinite sets don't exist. They do. They absolutely do. It's not because you can't enumerate something that it doesn't exist. That's a very important thing to understand. You can have a set is a concept, and a set, you can say, okay, the set of all things that are white. And it doesn't matter that you could create the set of all things that are white is finite as far as the things that are white on planet Earth. Because you could take every object that is white, you could have a certain threshold at which you decide that's white enough. And you could gather them in a pile of white stuff. And eventually, there would be nothing left behind you. You would have gathered the whole thing that exists on planet Earth that is white. However, the things that are white set can be interpreted as the thing that could be white. And then you could think, well, with the things that could potentially be white, well, anything could be painted in white. And so that's an infinite set. The things that could potentially be white or the possible white things. So the radical rejection of the concept of infinity is merely a misunderstanding, a misappropriation of the axioms of enumeration as it relates to existence. And you can choose to obfuscate the reality that infinite sets are possible. You can apparently this guy has made a whole career about it. Go ahead. But you're just depriving yourself of a category of things. Now, there's plenty of finite math that is absolutely sufficient and satisfactory. But existence is easy. Existence is easy, and it is very easy to think of an infinite set. Lord to the Second says, I bring it up because there was a revolution led by some Jewish mathematicians, notably David Hilbert, that forced ZFC, infinite set theory, into the foundations of math. Thought it was interesting. Yes, infinite set theory is extremely useful. And in fact, I'm using it with Grok right now. I have some equations that were developed in my own language, and Grok is imposing some degree of set labeling to my own formalism. And it works. It works great. Absolutely. Yes, you can say such a thing as there are infinitely many primes, but here's the product of all primes. Well, there are infinitely many. How can you list them? Well, I don't have to list them. I just invoke the idea that you're going to take all the primes up to infinity, and you're going to multiply them together, and you're going to get the combined product of all the primes, which is the infinite primorial. Lord to the Second says, anyway, the most interesting aspect of Wilderberg is that He has formulated calculus without infinite processes. He calls it the algebraic calculus. It's very satisfying to study, but I agree with you. Oh, that's interesting. I'd like to hear about it. Now, I don't know how that works, because calculus is always infinite in principle, but also always finite in practice. So I don't know what would be his contribution there. I would need to get a reference and read about it. Green Tanamo, Trump deal gives U.S. sovereignty over small pockets of Greenland for military base, with little official information on what Trump earlier called a framework of a future deal with respect to Greenland. The NYT noted that they have seen the deal and it compares to the United Kingdom's bases in Cyprus, which are regarded as British territory. So we're going to get these U.S. little U.S. pockets of land that is not very meaningful for Greenland, and that gives Trump what he wanted to have. Would it matter? Well, for Greenland, what it probably means is this will import some degree of American traffic. Just the fact that you transport soldiers and you build a base, this leads you to spend U.S. dollars in the local economy. And I'm sure that the Greenlanders will be happy about it. So I think it's a good deal. I mean, it's a good deal for everyone involved if that comes to be confirmed. Stentron says, kick the door down. Strat worked, I guess. Yeah, it's always what Trump does. Art of the deal, says DK Shadow. It's always what Trump does. Just overstates, dials back to something soft, which is the contrary of my personality. I like to go all in. Trump never goes all in. He goes all in words, but he never actually goes all in. He always has a point, an end point in mind that he wants to reach. That is his heart of the deal. Your microphone is unmuted, but has no signal. No, I think you guys are hearing me. I don't know why Streamlabs is telling me this. Waste of the day. Texas Southern University spending inventory in shambles. Top line. Texas Southern University has no idea where most of its inventory is located, ignored safeguards meant to prevent overspending, and reported inaccurate information to the Texas Comptroller. Auditors randomly selected 60 pieces of property owned by TSU, and university employees were unable to locate 50 of them. This is such an administrative labyrinth. I remember when I was in my Lamprey lab at the University of Montreal. There was like this device. I need to buy this $2,000 device to record the brain of lampreys for my doctorate. So it's like, okay, there's a budget. Now there's a center. There's the bureaucrat center for purchases. Now it's like, I could just buy it. I know where to buy it. It's on the internet. I can just order it. No. You have to pass through the office of the bureaucrats of the purchases of the university, because they want to record everything that you buy, and they sell the idea that bypassing through these bureaucrats, they can have deals and good prices. But it's entirely not true. In fact, they typically end up paying more. And it's like that. Then I had bought an amplifier, a sound, a stereo sound player, basically. Because the scientific version that allows you to hear the brain of the lamprey, that was like $3,000. And I'm like, we're not wasting $3,000 of public money on basically a speaker. And so I'm like, we're going to buy a $30 stereo from Sears, and it's going to do the job. Now that triggers the bureaucrats. It's like, oh, well, you want to buy a stereo for $30? Are you having fun with public money? You want to play music in your lab? It's like, no, I'm saving so much money because I'm buying something that's $30 instead of buying the scientific speaker that's the exact same, but that's just being sold to us for $3,000. But no, I had to write a whole letter that was committing not to listen to music. And they wanted pictures that the stereo was truly in a place and location where it couldn't be used for a party. That it was truly used for scientific purpose. It's like, you are putting so many obstacles in my way that I'm actually thinking, wow, I should have gone the $3,000 road buying the scientific speaker. You would have never questioned me. You would have said, oh, well, that's a high quality speaker. They can't possibly be buying this scientific thing and it's scientific looking speaker for $3,000 for no reason at all. But they suspect you when you get it cheap. This is why it's like entrepreneurship and self-employment is so much more rewarding because you don't have these obstacles. But the institutions, bro, it's depressive because it ends up weighing on your mind, this kind of crap. Because you see a whole system that ultimately just wants to pay $3,000. It just wants to pay $3,000. They have all of their soldiers in line to stop you from doing anything else than paying $3,000 for something that's worth $30. Ty Rogerson says, hate that crap. Like how when I worked from home, I couldn't show up early to catch up on things for free because if I trip on an electrical cord, I could sue them. Oh, yeah. They annoy me so much when they start to... Oh, no, but the insurance. What about the insurance? No, no, we can't let you do that. The insurance. But in a way, I understand the fear. They live under corporate fear. Because these companies, you know, they try to make 30 cents profits on the cheese whiz. Can you imagine how many cheese whiz pots you have to sell before the 30 cents accumulate to even paying yourself one employee? And that employee sues you for $1 million. And it's like, ah, now I have to sell 3 million pots of cheese whiz just to compensate for that one employee who sued me. Who sued me in court and one judge that decided that, yes, I'm owing him $1 million. That's a lot of cheese whiz. And at some point, they become paranoid. They want to control everything. They want to minimize all the risks. But I understand them, but it makes life terrible. That's why self-employment is more fit to me. Ty Rogerson says, so then I broke the rules and secretly caught up on work without them knowing. Oh, yeah, that happens so often where the employees are so dedicated to their environment that their boss tells them, no, no, I want you to leave at 6:50. I want you to prepare leaving so that I don't pay one more minute after 7. And some people will just, you know, give their break away, give their time away because they want the thing to be in order. They want the company to work. And they have kind of an ethics of doing things right. But that really sucks as a situation, yes. Ty Rogerson says, so then not only are you not paid overtime, but you risk getting fired for just doing the things right. Oh yeah, getting fired for doing the things right. I mean, isn't that what's happening with the current university? Because I was looking at the waste news of Texas Southern University. How do universities even survive? They have this bureaucratic layer they don't have a capacity to attract intelligent people anymore. And anyways, they don't care all that much. They veered totally toward basically DEI, choosing people for basically any criteria but academic merit. How will a university look like in 30 years from now? How does a university look like today? I mean, I was annoyed in 2015 at universities. I was annoyed in 2010 at universities. I wonder if I would even make it one day in the university today. Because ultimately, they punish people for what? For doing the right thing, which is the search for truth. The university has decided that there were certain truths that are barred, and that even if you reach them in a genuine attempt at understanding the world, they are barred from the university. Therefore, they are selecting deceptive people. They are selecting either self-deception, fraud, or liars who just lie about their beliefs, who can just spout whatever the Marxist department director wants to hear. Ty Rogerson says not to go on about it, but then when you find workarounds to succeed, anyway, they introduce a worse system and chance policies, so your income drops by half long term regardless. Oh yeah, I've seen this, the development of policies, because I guess you and I, Ty Rogerson, are probably similar. We're two rule breakers. It's like there were so many rules, and some of them, they were just instantiated for me in the university. It's like, oh yeah, JF is such a maniac. He works with the monkeys up to 3 a.m. So now we're going to impose a ban on anything after 9 p.m. And it's like, okay, then we're diminishing productivity. Oh, and then JF didn't ask about the permission for this, and so we're going to impose a permission form for anything. Okay, now everything has become more costly to run. Lord to the second, and this will be my last chat read after we will close the show. Lord to the second says, thinking back on it, I could never return to the university, not even as a professor. It's the bureaucrats. It's the leftist profs. It's the relaxed standards. Oh, yeah, very bizarre, very bizarre. I mean, there are people in the hard sciences that are just psycho workaholic in the university, but the whole system is certainly not built by them. The whole system is built by administration, and they have so much control there. They're pressing the juice of the university for their own salary. And eventually they tempt even researchers and truly free-thinking academic. They tempt them by saying, you're going to have an administrative duty. You're going to be part of this committee. And then the researcher slowly gets transformed into an administrator that just makes abstract decisions like, we need more females in bridge engineering. That's what an administrator does. Trenton says, JF put his name in the goblet of fire. You mean I self-canceled? Yes, in a way I did, absolutely. Last news item, operation of Australia's largest coal power station extended to 2029. Okay. So, I mean, it's just that it was all lies when they were saying we're rolling off these things. They never, just like when they were saying like 2035, all vehicles will be electric. It's just wishful thinking. Let the market decide. The day electricity is such a viable form of energy, the cost of these cars will be lower. Everyone will be more happy to buy electric cars, and everyone will be super happy to save money on their transport cost. But you can't just wish it. You can't just make it happen through force. That is it for tonight. Plepidas says, I read an article a few years ago that Academia filters out 130 to 150 IQ people. 150 IQ plus survive because they are the meat of the operation, and the less than 130 are the co-stars slash admins. I think that is true, but I think the ranges are kind of half. I think it's not 150 plus. I think it's 130 plus are the people who succeed and actually do something and actually understand and become good professors. And the administrators, I don't think they're below 130. I think they're more like below 110. Because let me tell you, these administrators, they come from... They haven't proven their intelligence at any single point in their life. They went humanities, they went no math, the no math option.